Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 2 of the Next Gen Whitetails podcast. As always, I'm your host, Harrison Vaughn, and on today's episode, we have a very special guest joining us. We have Mr. Nathan Spangler from Resource Management Services out of Arkansas. He is a graduate of NC State University, an avid outdoorsman, and he's going to help us dive into and analyze some of the facts around whitetail management and how it can relate to our job as stewards of the land when it comes to growing, maintaining, and conserving forests within the land we hunt. So thank you all for being here today. Stick with us. Stay tuned. We got a very special one for you today. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let us welcome to the floor Mr. Nathan Spangler. Nathan, how are you today?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Before we get into the real substance today, I want you to kind of introduce yourself, what you do, where you graduated from, and what your background in hunting is. So I'll let you take the floor.
All right, sure thing. Well, right now I work for a company called Resource Management Services. They have land all the way from North Carolina through East Texas. It's a TMO for any forestry nerds out there. But a lot of the work I do mostly deals with growing commercial timber, so pretty much pine.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of pine. If you could imagine, an 80-acre tract that is planted in rows that looks like corn instead. They're pine trees.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do. I graduated with a degree in forest management this past year from NC State University. Go Pat. And so I guess a little bit of my background into hunting. Kind of grew up with it. I had plenty of cousins and relatives who grew up hunting and slowly kind of started easing my way into it, kind of early middle school, maybe sixth grade or so, and have just been hooked on it ever since. I mean, if there's a season for it, I'm hunting it, and so that's a little bit about me.
Fantastic. Now, before we get into some of the questions and the information we have for us today, what was it like? So we went over this a little bit on the podcast last week about what it was like for me with the first deer I harvested and some of my early hunting experiences. What was it like for you in your first hunts that you ever had, Nate?
Well, let's see. Do you want a story?
We'll go with a story. Yeah, we love stories.
All right. Well, the first time I ever went hunting was my cousin John Michael. He's probably, I think he's about 8 years older than me.
Yep.
And I was up at our grandparents' farm, and he was like, I'm going hunting this weekend. You want to tag along? And I'm like, oh, yeah, man, sure. And I can remember walking out to that stand, and it was pitch black out. This was during bow season.
Yep.
And we're walking to the stand, and JM's on my left side, and I'm kind of near some brush, and we ended up bumping a doe, and so she was bedded down, and she blew at me, and that was the first time I had ever heard a deer blow, and I had no idea what it was. All I know, it was pitch black, and I'm hearing, you know,
oh, yeah,
20 feet away from me, and it scared the daylights out of me.
Oh, I'm sure.
But, first experiences, man, just sat in the stand with John Michael for the longest time, us just talking. You know, I sat there, saw him shoot 2 deer before I got my first one. But, the adrenaline going through me after that first deer is just, it's unmatched. But yet what keeps me into hunting is that you get that adrenaline rush every time you shoot a deer.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter if your first deer was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. You always get that little rush when you end up dropping one.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think that a lot of that has to go into the, you know, the passion and just the love that we have for being out there and pursuing these animals. And, you know, we've talked about it last week, just the love that goes into it and the drive that we all have when it comes to, you know, passionately pursuing these animals. There's a lot of people that there's a lot of people that just like to go out there and, you know, sit in a stand. It doesn't really matter whether they see anything or not, but it's a combination of that feeling and the feeling of just enjoying being out there, being in nature and watching these animals in their habitat. We're intruders where they live, and being able to pursue them and chase them in a way that, you know, they act completely natural. We can see them in their most natural state, and that's what we really love about it. It's right, being out there right with them. It's hunting them. It's watching them. It's a combination of all of those things. So it's a heck of an experience. It's a heck of a time to be out there, and we're very blessed, very fortunate to be able to share in those experiences. Well, if you're ready, we'll dive into some of the questions we have for us today.
Yeah, man. Let's get cracking.
Awesome. So our first question we have is, can you help explain to us a little bit about how timber cutting and forest regeneration can contribute to whitetail habitat? So what I mean by that is, you know, you describe to us the areas that you primarily are working, that being, you know, rows of timber that people plant after a clear cutting. So for those of us that, you know, live in or hunt on properties that are primarily these row-based timber regions, how can we best control them, best use them? How can we best manage these specific areas post-cutting in order to help with regeneration of the forest, but also to help us contribute to whitetail habitat and grow the deer and the experiences that we're really looking for?
Sure. So, let's see. Well, by cutting the timber, are you talking like clear cuts or kind of like thinnings?
So,
okay, I'll just do both of them.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So, let's say, well, one of the, it's the herbaceous cover, kind of, you know, your forbs, the little seedlings, your grasses and stuff like that.
Yep.
That makes for good bedding habitat, as well as good, you know, forage for deer.
Right.
And a lot of times, you know, following a thinning, saying going out, taking a few trees out, or disking a line, whatever it may be, anything that will allow sunlight to hit the ground.
Yep.
In most instances, you will have those native plants start to regenerate.
Yep.
So, you know, say following a thinning, if you're going in and say you want to, I don't know, cut out every fifth row of pines and then select a few here and there.
Right.
So say right after that, you're opening up the canopy to help the trees grow in the next few years. So immediately following that cut, you see more sunlight being able to hit the ground, which is when you're going to see, you know, blackberry thickets, poison ivy. I mean, the list goes on and on. You'll start seeing that kind of pop up throughout the forest.
Right.
And so not only are you helping the trees, giving them, you know, more room to grow, in my case, more room to put on diameter for saw timber.
Right.
You're also allowing that understory to get the sunlight it needs to sprout all the herbaceous plants that deer often find essential to their survival.
Right. So when we're looking at it, whether it's clear cutting or whether it's spot cutting, like you said, and just thinning the timber, that sort of behavior, opening up the canopy, giving more sunlight to the forest floor, is giving the opportunity for these native forbs and these native, what we would often call weeds when it comes to food plotting. It's giving it the opportunity for it to grow and produce not only bedding cover, but this food cover that the whitetails rely on in their native environment.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. And then clear cutting just kind of takes it to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you say you clear cut 80 acres, you're going to see that 80 acres. I mean, the trees don't grow overnight.
Right.
So those first few years, you're going to get just hammered with herbaceous weeds.
Yep.
But that's what the deer like.
Right. That's what's going to contribute to that bedding habitat, that extra forage that they're looking for. Now, when it comes to clear cutting, for instance, specifically clear cutting, if we were to go in there and clear cut a block of timber, right? And you've got that secondary growth coming up after a clear cut. How many years are we looking at between, you know, when you first clear cut a property, there's obviously going to be a time frame where there's really no bedding cover, there's no food, there's a time frame where there's nothing there for the deer. There's no longer a forest, there's nothing for them to eat on, there's nothing for them to bed in. How long are we looking between a clear cut on a property and to the point where that forest regeneration gets to a point where there's no longer that herbaceous cover in that secondary growth kind of stage? How many years are we looking at of really successful, really productive bedding and food habitat between clear cutting to mature enough trees that cover is kind of gone?
All right. So typically when you, if you were to clear cut, the first things that will come up are, you know, the grasses, there's miscellaneous forbs and everything.
Right.
That happens very quickly.
Yep.
Basically, if you'd be amazed if you clear cut a tract of land in January,
mm-hmm.
by the time it came July, and you know, you're halfway through the growing season, it's going to look like a completely different stand. I mean, you're going to have so much vegetation.
Right.
That's just coming up. As you start to, you know, maybe you'll have a few trees here and there come up, which if they survive the deer trying to eat them, you know, typically in, let's say, 3 years or so, you kind of see some, say, like poplar, sweet gum, maple. Those kind of trees are going to start popping up. And if left alone, you know, eventually those trees will outcompete all the grasses on the ground.
Right.
Which, as the tree gets bigger, it's shading out more and more of this vegetation that needs the sunlight to grow. So, you know, following a clear cut, if you left it alone for probably, I don't know, say 10, 15 years.
Yep.
At that point, it would probably start to look more like a young forest.
Yep.
You'd kind of have a mini established canopy.
Yep.
It would be pretty thick to walk through. You know, that's, it can be tough during that period, but you have a good, I mean, you have a few years before it reaches that point, though.
Right. So basically between years, you know, 1, 2, and 3, you're looking at very thick herbaceous cover, poison ivy, blackberry, things like that, that natural weed and grass that's going to grow between years 1 and 3 after a clear cut. And then from years 3 through 15, you're still looking at a very substantial amount of understory growth that's going on before you get to the stage where you basically got a young forest that's no longer producing that solid cover at the ground level, and you're into more of an environment of canopy and young forest.
Yeah.
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 Well, that makes...
So up until that point where that canopy is well established,
yep,
there will still be a ton of cover there.
Right.
I mean, even if when we plant trees,
yep,
and we plant pine trees, you know, if you, before that first thin, say it's about, you know, I'll say 11, 12 years old.
Yep.
Like, those trees are pretty big. There's quite an established canopy. But if it has been completely left alone, there's still going to be a lot of understory brush. Yep. I know, because I have to walk through it all the time.
Yeah.
And I can tell you there's no shortage of understory brush.
Yep. Well, that makes complete sense. I mean, it kind of gives some insight on these, you know, these properties a lot of guys will look at, and they see this cut timber and they're thinking, you know, I'm going to have to either clear cut all these stumps, I'm going to have to get rid of all this stuff, get rid of all this debris and this brush in order to, you know, make it fine whitetail habitat. But, you know, when you really look at it after a clear cutting, you've got all this herbaceous cover that's coming up between blackberry, poison ivy, other sort of forbs that are growing that are not only contributing to whitetail cover, but they're actually offering a very large amount of native whitetail forage that's going on in these clear cut forests. I mean, I know a lot of us have heard that, you know, some of the biggest deserts when it comes to whitetail habitat is these big old pine forests where there's really no understory because of all the canopy covering it up. And these trees have reached a diameter and a size where, you know, they're about to be cut. They're about to be cut by guys like you. So really between years 1 and 15 is when we're able to produce a lot of whitetail cover, a lot of food for these deer to come into and live in. Like I said, and like you said, between years kind of 1 and 15.
Yeah. Now, I will say, so, like, you know, us being from Piedmont, North Carolina.
Right.
If you were to clear cut there, you see a lot of these common species, and they're pretty common throughout the southeastern United States.
Yeah.
Of the red maples, the yellow poplars, the sweet gums coming up.
Yep.
Now, pines can grow very fast, so you do have to think. Say you clear cut a tract of land, and you know there's pines all surrounding the outside.
Yeah.
You're gonna have those volunteer pines seed in.
Yeah,
and at that point, if you have a lot of pines seeding in, that window will slowly start to creep back.
Yeah, that makes sense.
15 years, it might be more like 13.
Yeah.
It might be more like 9. In some cases, it could be 8 years old, and you'd be going, man, well, this is thick as crap. And it is, because the pines just, when they get established, they can just go.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
something to keep in mind.
Definitely something to think on, especially with guys that are, you know, hunting in areas where this sort of replanted forest is prevalent and where they're kind of sticking their stands and hanging out at. So next question I got for you, so kind of going off of this idea of timber and timber regeneration and older growth stands of timber, what is our best strategy as whitetail hunters and as stewards of the land to create bedding habitat within these old growth timber forests? So when I say old growth, I'm not necessarily saying, you know, these big old stands of red and white oak and poplar and some of these deciduous trees. But, you know, for guys that might be hunting on properties that are primarily these pine stands that have reached a point where they're close to cutting, there's really not much in terms of going in and just wasting space to clear out food plots. What's going to be our best strategy for creating this bedding habitat within these older stands of timber?
Well, I'll say probably the first bet,
mm-hmm.
if you really want good, I guess, bedding.
Yep.
Then a super mature forest might not be the first choice, but if that's what you have to work with.
Yeah.
If there's, without taking out any trees, if there's a way to say, doing something as simple as like putting in a shooting lane.
Yep.
you know, when you're disturbing the soil, that's when you get a lot of these, the good forage plants, as well as some of that bedding cover.
Yeah.
So something as simple as putting in a shooting lane, you know, along the side of the road, you'll see partridge pea, blackberry, you yep. know, everything starting to come up. So something like that, you know, a food plot's always a good choice. If you can't do that, though, really, whatever you can do
yeah.
to help sunlight reach that forest floor.
So really, instead of, you know, the I think a lot of guys have this mentality and this idea that they need to go in there and clear cut these, you know, between a half an acre and multiple acres in size areas in order to either create bedding cover to get that sunlight into the forest or to create food plots. A better idea would be more to create these lanes, create strips and things like that, where you're not necessarily disturbing the growth of the timber, but you're creating these small pockets of safety and density that these deer can really engage with in terms of bedding habitat and forage.
Yeah. So now that little clear cut, you know, clearing out a half acre or whatever it may be.
Right.
By no means am I putting that down. That's right. Actually great.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of like the going back to the thinning thing, I mean, say you got a mature forest and you have a windstorm.
Yeah.
And two or three trees fall down.
Yep.
You know, just that, the canopy opening up to let that sunlight hit the ground, that's going to, you know, in that little pocket, you're going to see it blow up with all sorts of plants that are already in the seedbed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, taking out a tree here or there, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a half acre.
Right.
I mean, if you cut down three trees kind of near each other,
yeah,
you can almost bet that little opening will be enough to make stuff start sprouting up, and it's going to get real thick.
That makes complete sense. And you're basically creating these little oasis areas within these older timber tracks where the deer are going to flock to, and they're going to be able to feel secure. They're going to be able to find forage, and they're going to be able to be in without necessarily having to disturb these larger tracts of timber.
Yeah.
That makes complete sense. I'll tell you what, real quick, before we keep going here, we're going to take just a quick break and we will get right back to you. So hold on 1 second and we are going to be right back with you on the next questions. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We're still here with Mr. Nathan Spangler, going over some of our forestry questions and thoughts that we might have in relation to forest management. So, Nathan, thank you again for being here. We'll jump into the next set of questions. So, we've already talked a little bit about managing timber tracts, how we can not only create bedding habitat, but how the timber itself kind of produces bedding habitat and forage on its own, with how it grows and the time frame and all that, and what we can look for as wildlife managers when it comes to dealing with particularly pine stands as forests. But for the next question we have, how can you regularly, or how can regular controlled burns increase forage for whitetails? So that would be within areas of timber, whether it is old growth, new growth, whatever it may be. How can, within a timber tract, within a timbered area, we can utilize fire and controlled burns best to increase forage for whitetails, but also to kind of like the trend has been here, maintain this forest habitat that we have going on?
Sure. Yeah. So actually, prescribed fires are a fantastic tool. I mean, fantastic for getting more forage and cover for deer, not only deer, I mean, turkey, quail, pheasant, I mean, you name it. Doing regular prescribed burns are great on so many levels for so many different wildlife.
Yeah.
Specifically for deer, So that burning, when you burn a area of forest, all that litter layer is usually what you're trying to torch. And so actually, contrary to popular belief, you're not just destroying the forest floor.
Right.
What happens when you burn is it's releasing a lot of those nutrients back into the soil.
Yep.
So you've got those nutrients being recycled back into the soil. Like we mentioned earlier, you have that soil disturbance, and all of that is going to kind of come together to give you ideal conditions for, you know, your poison ivy, your blackberry, your, you know, smilax, blue beauty berry, stuff like that to pop back up.
Yep.
Now, the thing with the burning is great, but it's best if you can kind of set up kind of like a burning interval.
Right.
Kind of like one of those first questions we were talking about. You know, you have that early successional growth, but then, you know, over time, it starts developing into, you get more woody vegetation.
Right.
Those trees are going to start taking over again. So if you burn a stand, it's great. And it's going to be great. But, you know, if you don't burn but every 8 years, at that point, then you're going to have these kind of intermediate story trees kind of filling up the canopy. And then you're kind of back at square one at, you know, now there's a full canopy and no sunlight's hitting the floor.
Right.
Which isn't great for your herbaceous plants. So, you know, I would say ideally, if you were able to burn every 2 to 3 years,
yep,
that would be great because you're allowing that early successional vegetation to get going. But then as you keep burning, you're usually able to catch, you know, those small sweet gums, those small maples and yellow poplar,
yep,
that like to sprout up. You usually catch those before they get too big. So if you're doing your usual rotations of burns,
mm-hmm,
you can kind of more or less keep that early successional vegetation just coming back and coming back and coming back.
Yeah. So as opposed to,
as long as it's allowed to do so with enough sunlight coming down.
Right. So as opposed to this whole idea of, like, you know, you cut a stand, you plant it, and then you've got X amount of years until that timber and those, like you said, those additional saplings that might come up after the planting, as opposed to just planting and allowing it to grow up as it is and limiting yourself to that set number of growing years where the timber allows for bedding habitat, forage from these blackberries, poison ivy, other plants, by burning on a regularly prescribed rate, you're kind of allowing this early successional growth to continue basically until the primary canopy of the planted forest gets to a point where it can no longer allow for any sunlight to reach the floor.
Yeah, pretty much.
Makes complete sense. You're basically just, you're allowing for this period of prime growth in this area of the best bedding and the best forage to continue over longer periods of time.
Yeah, so as long as there's sunlight in this forest stand hitting the floor,
yep,
you know, basically every time you do a burn, it's almost like resetting that clock.
Yep.
Like, you know, you might be early succession, kind of going to, you know, kind of early mid succession. Say you do a burn, say it's a little hot, it's essentially going to knock it right back down to where those last 3 or 4 years, they were great. Now you put those nutrients back in the soil, and now you're going to start over again and have another few years where it's just that early successional stuff coming up.
Yep. Makes complete sense. So next, what's the best herbicide strategy for controlling food plots while also maintaining the natural forage in surrounding areas. So this is kind of separating us from this forest management idea and focusing more on, you know, deer-related food plots and things like that. I know we've talked a lot about poison ivy and blackberry and a lot of these natural forages and forbs that come up after burns, after clearings. But as you know, appropriate land managers, how can we not only manage our properties for whitetails when it comes to, you know, spraying things like glyphosate and other herbicides for food plots, but how can we best maintain these areas where we're not only allowing for these small openings for food plots and food for deer, but how can we best maintain these areas to contribute to this kind of early successional habitat along with specifically planted food plots?
All right. Well, let me think here.
Mm-hmm.
So as you mentioned before, glyphosate as the active ingredient in Roundup.
Yep.
It's probably, if not the most common pesticide used in probably America.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, you know, very popular. And, you know, a lot of times, if you have the right sprayer,
yeah,
you can often just spot treat,
yep,
areas.
Yep.
So say, you know, you planted, I don't know, say you have a bunch of clover you planted.
Yep.
And you just got, you know, a little thing here, a little thing there. It's not clover. It's none of the native vegetation. It's not really aiding, or it's not really adding to the bedding. It's not really good forage food.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good time where you could go through and spot treat it with, say, Roundup or something.
Yeah.
In order to kill that and allow for any other native vegetation to then sprout in its place.
Yeah.
And the great thing about glyphosate too is it's not soil active.
Right.
So it has to be applied foliarly. So, you know, if you're prepping your food plot or something, you know, and say you're starting from scratch and you decide to spray it all, you know, you can spray it and it's going to die. And then basically about as soon as it's dead, you could go ahead and do whatever you got to do to go ahead and replant your plot.
Yeah. And I think that's something we've seen on, you know, we've posted some pictures and some videos on the Next Gen Whitetails Instagram page of some newly established food plots that have been gone into and they've been sprayed pretty vigorously and then disced and then spot sprayed after the disking to kind of deal with some of these peskier weeds that might be coming up after the spraying. So sure. It's not an active part of the soil once it kills these plants that you no longer want in there. It's not lingering behind and it's not going to affect your food plots after they're seeded so long as you don't actively spray them while they're growing.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, spot on.
Yeah.
It's not going to, if you're trying to get rid of something as it sprouts,
mm-hmm,
it'll kill it dead like a doornail. If you spray the soil, it's not going to do anything. Everything's just going to come right back up.
Right. So then, you know, when we're thinking about forest management and things like that, if we were to go into an area and clear a spot that's going to serve as a food plot, if we were to spray some of the surrounding areas just to, you know, give us a better idea or better access of the area in order to go in there and plant it, glyphosate specifically as a choice herbicide is not going to affect that growth that's going to happen later on, whether it's plants that we plant or whether it's just other natural vegetation that's going to pop up. It's not going to have those lingering effects on our land, be that forest or food plot specifically. It's going to still allow for that growth to come back up later. It's only going to affect those actively growing plants.
Absolutely. Yeah, you should not see any sort of lingering effects from spraying glyphosate.
Fantastic. So that definitely is, I think, going to help a lot of strategies around some of our listeners, and it's going to kind of give us a better idea of how we can prep food plots, prep land in a way that's going to contribute to not only the food plot plans we have and the areas where we want to focus deer on, but it's also going to allow for some of these other areas surrounding food plots to still contribute to that forest growth in a way that's not going to affect it long term, where we can clear shooting lanes, we can clear areas to access a path in order to get to these areas, but this growth is going to continue later on, even after this has been applied and killed, so long as we don't go and reapply it after plants start regrowing.
Sure is.
Awesome.
You have to spray an actively growing plant.
Yep.
For it to take effect.
Awesome. Well, Nathan, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on today. I know our listeners have been thrilled listening, and I know I personally have gained a lot of knowledge and information from talking with you here today, but we just really appreciate you being on here today, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Anytime, if you have any sort of questions, feel free to shoot me a text or shoot me a call, and I'll try to answer it the best I can.
Fantastic. Well, Nathan, thank you again for being on today. We'll talk to you soon, and we'll most certainly have you back on to talk to us and educate us here in the near future.
Sounds good, man. You have a good one.
Thanks, Nathan. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Alrighty, everybody. Once again, thank you so much for being here today. We really enjoyed having Mr. Nathan Spangler on talking to us about timber management, and I hope you gained something from the information he provided with us, whether it's gaining it for your own hunting tracks or whether it's just new knowledge for you that you can take with you and hold on to as you may see fit. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please give us a follow on whatever podcast platform you are listening on, and please check us out on Instagram as well at NXTGEN. Whitetails. That is NXTGEN Whitetails on Instagram. As always, new podcasts and new episodes will be dropping every Wednesday evening. And here in the future, we will have some more very special guests, just as we did today. So once again, if you enjoyed listening to this, please drop us a follow on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. Check us out on Instagram at NextGen Whitetails. And as always, have a wonderful day. And thanks for being a part of the next gen.